You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
So how you doing, David?
Doing great. It's a beautiful day, at least, you know, here in LA, so kind of enjoying it.
Beautiful day in LA. Well, thanks for rubbing it in. I appreciate that.
Sorry.
I'm in Illinois, and it's a rainy day.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
You're in Illinois?
Yeah.
Sorry about that whole pennant thing. I had no hand in that.
Oh, wow. There we go.
Well, I thought I'd start fresh, you know, because I knew I'd be lurking in the background saying, you know, I am sorry. I feel for you. There's nothing, you know, I am actually not a Dodgers fan. I mean, not that I dislike the Dodgers. I'm just not a fan of them. So it's, you know, when I heard about it, because I actually have some coworkers who are such Dodgers fans, and we have like also a remote employee that is in Chicago, and it got really kind of sticky there on Friday around the office. And so now I just realized, you know, start it off, you know, be polite, you know, diplomatic about the whole thing, you know. So,
well, you know, honestly, we getting that one World Series under our belt, I was just getting tired of hearing maybe next year. And we finally had that year where it happened. And, you know, it feels like, you know, just kind of reinvigorated the whole franchise. You know, it's not like the lovable losers anymore, you know. And now it's like, you know, a ball club that can be, you know, serious, you know, in contention, you know. But, you know, sure. I mean, you're going to run into snags, and it's not going to be every year, you know, as much as you'd like it to be the Blackhawks or the Bulls, but – you know, so be it.
Yeah, well, you know, at least last year when they did win, it was like a movie. I mean, it was an epic game 7, you know, tied at the bottom of the ninth and extra innings and rain delay. I mean, movies aren't written that well. You know, it was, and you know, with the history of the Cubs never winning, so it was it was quite exciting, and I'm not in Chicago now. I live down in the Tampa area.
Oh, okay.
But I'm a huge Cubs fan, and was very excited. We were up there a week ago, and things were looking up, and then, you know, the Dodgers just kept winning. So, but like Dave, I understand. I'm not bitter. It's not often. It's not often that teams can go back to back.
Right.
So for them to actually make the World Series back to back is just unlikely. So, sure. You know, and the two teams that are in the World Series now, it's not the teams that were in it last year. So, you know,
very true.
It changes every year, and that's some of the fun part of it. The parity, you know, you don't always want to see the same teams dominating all over every time, like the Patriots or something. I'm not really truly a Patriot hater or anything, but you know, you get kind of tired of seeing the same old teams back every stinking year. So,
oh, I totally get it. And yeah. You know, not to make it totally all about sports, you know, because I realize it's not the whole point. But I'm infamous in a town where you know, LA has now recently has two football teams. Actually, it's 2.5. You know, because there's obviously the Rams and the Chargers, but ultimately the unofficial team in LA is the Raiders, and that's just the way it is. But for whatever reason, and I couldn't tell you why, I've always been a fan of the New Orleans Saints. And so that's the whole thing. It's like, you know, the Saints is one of those teams that, you know, they could be ahead by, you know, 20 points in the fourth quarter, and I'd be sitting there going, well, it's still close because I don't know what's going to happen. Because you don't. You have no idea what's going to happen with the Saints. And so today when I was, you know, I didn't even get a chance to watch the game, but when they were saying, yeah, they actually beat you know, Green Bay, I'm thinking, really? Did Lightning hit? What happened there? I mean, I'm glad, but I mean, that doesn't happen. What's going on? You know?
I think it's Aaron Rodgers being injured now for the rest.
Oh, that's true.
What it is? That's most likely the problem. I mean, he's been carrying that team on his shoulders for a long time. So.
Very true. You know?
Yeah. So anyway.
This is great sports talk, by the way.
Yeah. So here I am.
I've got like almost nothing on sports, by the way. But we expended my whole knowledge with the whole Cubs right there.
Yeah, I'm on my screen. I see David and David. Well, Dave and David, and I think of that song "Boomtown" from the '80s. So I'm talking to David and David right now. It's kind of cool. I don't know if you know that song, David. David, I know Dave White knows that song.
Yeah, I was just thinking Bob Newhart, Daryl, and my other brother, the Daryl.
My other brother, Daryl.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's get this thing rolling because I am.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
I am dying to hear more about this game you got going.
Yeah, and how much time do you have for us, David?
As much as you want to talk, no worries.
All right, well, cool. I didn't know if we had a time limitation, which we would try to respect, but if we don't, then that's awesome. And is it Kizia?
It's Kize, but don't worry. Nobody gets it right. It's all good.
Okay. Say it one more time. Kize?
Kize.
Kize. Okay, cool. Yeah, mine's a lot simpler, White, so...
It is Mr. Witte, thank you.
Yeah, there
you go. And mine is Compton, like straight out of, yes.
Straight out.
Okay. Yeah,
straight I'm familiar out. With it.
Yeah, yeah, I grew up in Southern California, so I'm familiar with the area too. I'm from Huntington Beach.
Ooh, right, there you go.
Yeah.
This is Banzai Retro Club, and this is a special Flipside episode. And what that means is we're too lazy to actually come up with a number system for our, anytime we have a special guest. So this is another one of those episodes. With me, I have got the wonderful, talented, who he promises that he's not a Neo Maxi Zoom Dweeby, Scott.
Hello, everybody. It's good to be back.
That's the first time I've done an intro like that for you, hasn't it?
That was a good one, Dave.
Yeah, thanks. Joining us is, I guess, co-creator of a just kick-ass RPG game, Spirit of 77. I wanted to read the description of it real quick before I even give you like your introduction, but. Just because it's so awesome. It's a Spirit of 77 is an over-the-top, pedal-to-the-metal, nitro-burning action-adventure role-playing game about an alternate history of 1977. Richard Nixon has made a deal with aliens and is still in the White House. Renegade rock gods from another galaxy have shared with us the power of glam. Kung Fu badasses wander the city streets, righting wrongs, and everyone is trying to stick it to the man. Can you dig it? And so joining us is David Kize.
Yep, that's it.
Ah, look at that. I got it right. Awesome. So thank you, David, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. As you can see, we really wanted to do something a little more subtle, little more character-driven, you know, that kind of, you know, slow, you know, French noir kind of, you know, quiet moment kind of thing, you know, Godard, that kind of thing.
Mission accomplished. So, how did this start for you guys?
Well, we both, myself and the other creator, Bob Richardson, we've known each other for about, I'd say probably 20, 25 years. And we have both been fans of 70s pop culture forever. We are, you know, Bob has seen every episode of the Rockford Files as an example. I am one of the few people, and you'll either know this or not, I'm one of the few people who have owned both on VHS and DVD the Bee Gees' Peter Frampton, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band movie. I don't know if you've even heard of it. Yes.
Oh, yes, we know it. Yes, I know it well. I've been trying to talk my wife into watching it because she's – I don't have it actually, but she's a huge Bee Gees fan. So – But she's not a Beatles fan, and I'm not a huge Beatles fan, but I do love the Bee Gees. I appreciate the what they gave to us pop culture wise in the 70s is astronomical. You can't even gauge it. They're such a huge part of the 70s, and then for them to morph into the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's, it's an awesome movie. I love it.
One of the things that really sells it whenever I try to explain it to others is its culmination or its big climax is with Aerosmith as the dirtiest rock band ever in musical history. They come out and this is when they're like way in their coke binge days, and they're coming out and you look at them and you want to hide your daughters and you want to hide your wife, and they come out so sleazy, and it's the greatest rock band performance you'll ever see in your life. You go, that's what rock and roll should be right there. This right there. Hopefully he doesn't fall over dead while he's performing. It's good though. We like what we're seeing. And so that's how I always sell the movie to people.
A lot of great cameos in that one too.
Yes. That was Steve Martin's first movie, matter of fact.
Was it really?
Oh yeah. Before The Jerk.
As Dr.
Maxwell Edison. Yeah.
Dr. Maxwell. Yeah. Bang Bang Maxwell Silverhammer.
He does not put that on his resume very often, though. He does
really?
Not talk about that. Oh, no, he's not proud of that movie, which is funny.
Huh.
I don't know why.
Man, you think they would want to take every ounce of recognition they can get, you know?
So the point being is that both Bob and I have always been fans of 70s pop culture, The Warriors, $6 Million Man, Shaft, all of it. And we had, you know, we're also gamers and have been, you know, gaming, you know, for decades. And at one point we were just kind of kicking ideas around, and we knew that this was an interesting idea. And when we shared the initial spark with one another, we probably wrote the first draft of it. I want to say we probably wrote the first 75 pages within a week. We really just were like grease lightning when it hit. And we knew it was something that we felt very strongly about, that we liked, and we thought others would too. We did a Kickstarter for it. And again, whenever you do a Kickstarter, you're never 100% sure if it's just going to be your mom or, you know, nobody else. But we did really well, and we managed to get that out, as well as its sequel, Wide World of 77. And Wide World of 77 includes things like Rollerball and Demolition Derbies, and it has some adventures in it, like Jurassic Parking Lot and The Kaboom Show. So basically, the whole game system, or the setting, allows us to take the pieces that we really like about the 70s and also poke fun at the stuff that you go, oh my goodness, how is that even, you know, how did we ever survive that as a decade? And basically taking what we like about it and sharing with people. And it's actually a really good experience for people who weren't around in the 70s. People who just, you know, they think, oh God, I'm not a fan of Saturday Night Fever or disco. But what happens is that people get into it, and because we try to make it very easy for people to pick up and to learn, it's been a really well received experience for us.
So for you and Bob, what are your, I guess, age ranges in the 70s?
Oh, Bob is a little younger than I am. I can remember hearing on my AM radio the Spinners playing Games People Play on normal radio, just like like the top 40 radio. So that should tell you something.
So then you would have been, what, a teenager?
I was younger. I was much younger.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was born in '70s, so I remember a lot of just awesomeness. And you, when you went, you know, you were talking about Rockford Files. God, that theme was just so awesome. But that was my dad's jam, you know. So by default, you know, that was the only thing on TV. So of course, I got to liking it too. But there's so much great, you know, 1970s nostalgia, you know, that. As a teenager, though, we started talking about a lot of the 80s stuff, but it's like the 70s stuff didn't get enough attention. So when I saw your Kickstarter, I automatically got excited, you know, because there's a lot of it invokes so many great memories. Just looking at, like, the picture that you have on your website and the Kickstarter, I mean, the gentleman that's, like, predominantly on the, you know, with the gold gun, I mean, he just reminds me of Jim Kelly, you know, from Enter the Dragon.
Yeah, basically, that's one of the not NPC, but one of the example characters, which is Private Investigator John Sampson. And John Sampson is a cross between Jim Kelly and John Shaft and all of that great, you know, early 70s movie stylist types of, I don't say cliches, but, you know, those types of archetypes.
Kind of the 70s tropes, if you will.
Yeah.
All right.
And of course we have the red, white, and blue 71 Barracuda on there as well.
Mm. Yeah. I've never been much of a gamer. I tried back in the 80s, played Car Wars a few times.
Okay.
I remember I was, what was the motorcycle? The Yamaha. V-Rod. No, not V-Rod. That's a Harley. V-Max. V-Max. I was very excited to have that as one of my vehicles. Anyway, but I never got to get into the group of people that would play RPGs. And so I kind of drifted away from that and never really got back into it. But this is just something that fascinates me because it's about the 70s. Now, Dave and I and Rose have been doing an 80s podcast for a while now, and I kept saying, I cannot wait to do a 70s, something in the 70s, because I love the pop culture, and I'm just excited to see more information about this game, because I could only find a couple little tidbits online, and it's really exciting to see something like this come alive. So I'm very excited to learn more about it. That's for sure. I may not be able to play it because I don't know anybody that plays RPGs around here. You know,
actually, that's a very interesting point to make. So one of the things that inspired us to put the game together was not just obviously the 70s genre, but right now role playing games are in a much different time than they were 10, 20 years ago, in that now you have independent RPG community. So you don't have to be one of the big guys anymore. If you have a good idea and you execute it well, you can find an audience for it because of the internet, because of Kickstarter, because of print on demand. So it allows you to take a little bit more chances than you probably would have done when basically you knew, okay, we have to basically fit into that sword and sorcery kind of milieu because that's what people are going to do. That's what's going to sell. Now it's a lot of interesting alternative types of genres that exist in independent RPGs that allow things like Spirit of 77 to basically not just be created, but also flourish.
Who's the artist? The artist is just kick-ass looking at everything you have here.
On the outside, our outside exterior artwork was done by a group called Conceptopolis. Our interior artwork is done by a gentleman by the name of Mr. Ron Joseph. Ron does quite a bit of work for IDW, and he does several series for, like, I believe he was just recently working on a comic for ROM, I think it might have been Rom, and he does I believe he also recently, and I know Ron's going to kill me if I don't give him the right props, but I think he was also working on one of the Mask comics as well.
Cool.
Just another callback to your 80s toys.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at one of the pictures where it was showing a depiction of what looks like is like an Atari game.
Yes.
That's an awesome throwback.
We did our homework, and one of the things that we tried to do is not just provide a game where you're getting to play a member of like the Baseball Furies, but we wanted to make sure we really sold the concept. So you go through it and you can see one of those great Columbia Record Club ads in there for like 28 track cassettes for a penny, or there's like a page out of a TV guide where all of our fictional TV shows. So that way it wasn't just talking about a game, but it was talking about a feeling, because we knew that was very important to what we were wanting to get across.
So you just threw out the Baseball Furies there, obviously a Warriors reference.
Yep.
Was that a big influence in the game?
Yeah. One of the things that we have is that there's the ability to play what's called a bopper. And a bopper basically is that you are the leader of a street gang. So it's not unlike being one of the Baseball Furies or one of the Warriors or the Orphans, who I always love. Let me try to explain a little bit more about the system to make it a little easier for you. So what you have is what's called your role, and your role is basically what you do. So the basic role, you could say, is like, I'm a tough guy. And obviously, a tough guy is somebody who fights, right? Or you could be like what's called a rocker. A rocker are all the musicians of the 70s. We really wanted to make the music also very prevalent in everything we did with Spirit of 77. And you also have what's called a sleuth, and you also have a vigilante. And you have a good old boy, which of course comes with what's called a sweet ride, where you basically can do all the cool car tricks, you know, when you're behind the wheel. But one of the other things that we added is that we had what's called a story. So your story is your background. And that actually was really important for us, because the story added flavor to your character that you wouldn't normally see in RPG. And I'll explain what I mean. So when you watch the movie Rocky, okay, the end of the movie are two tough guys battling it out, Apollo Creed and Rocky. Now, Apollo Creed is a professional fighter. Okay, he is an athlete. He's a professional athlete. It's a business to him. So this is something he's been training to do, and he has done it so long that he does it in the public eye that he knows how to basically focus on it as a sports athlete. So he is what's called an all-star tough guy. Rocky, on the other hand, is from the streets of Philadelphia. He's the guy that runs on the street, beats up pieces of meat, you know, does a little protection work on the side. So he's what's, you know, he's a man of the people, man of the streets. So he's called a one bad mother tough guy. So you have an all-star tough guy versus a one bad mother tough guy. And because of their backgrounds, they have different abilities associated with them that the other guy wouldn't necessarily have. Although they're both tough guys, right? So it allows them to have different strengths, and so that's what makes the difference between somebody like Rocky versus $6 Million Man. It's what makes the difference between, say, Jim Rockford, who's an ex-con, versus like Kojak or somebody like
Columbo.
Or Columbo. Yeah. So it allows a lot of different mix and match and a lot of different unique characters that can come through.
This sounds really cool because, I mean, back in the late 80s, you know, that was I was into Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, and I remember doing things like Druid and Warriors and, you know, Mage and all that stuff, but I don't remember there being a lot of time or energy put into the backstory.
Sure.
And that's what sounds so unique about your system then, you know, that you're giving kind of a here's how this person, you know, became who they were. You know, it sounds awesome.
Yeah, and it's not just giving the backstory, but it's saying, okay, because I have this backstory, that means I have certain abilities and certain strengths that I have that another person who doesn't have that background would be. For another good example of that is we play up, you know, the glam part of it, which is, you know, that whole Ziggy Stardust kind of thing. So that's obviously very focused on how you appear as opposed to, say, like a former vet or somebody who used to be in the Army who has different strengths because of that Army background.
All right, so now what is a glam person going to do against an Army vet? Come on.
Oh, plenty. So basically what happens is that one of the moves that happens for the glam, and you have a what it's called a move, by the way. It gives you an ability if you choose it. So one of them is called Who Looks Fabulous. So at any moment, you can just have everybody look at you at one given moment. Or actually, my favorite, of course, is a move called Superfly. And Superfly is basically a move where at any given moment, you look good. You know, you may have received you might have just gone through an explosion, or you may have actually, you know, been beat up, but your outfit looks amazing. And that,
I look good.
Yeah, there you go. So that's one of the skills, as opposed to like a former vet who basically has what's called Brothers in Green, where if you run into somebody who used to be in the military, you have an opportunity to be able to get on his good side more than somebody else. So it allows a lot of different mix and match.
So then the player, how do you get to do any kind of customization of the backstory, or?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Actually, okay. Let me talk about that a little bit, just because I want to try to sell Scott on this. So.
All right. Well, I mean, I'm very interested. This is fascinating to me, and I just love the pop culture of the 70s. You know, I was born in 68, so all of this is all part of my childhood. And my wife and I were actually talking the other day about how we like music of the 70s more than we actually like music of the 80s. Although the 80s music was very centric to our high school years and you know, it was very important to us. There's something about the 70s music that really connects with us because it brings us that something. I don't know what it is. So that I'm sold on the 70s on this. When I got satellite radio a few years back, I've had it for like, I don't know, 9 or 10 years. I went like a whole year without ever changing the station from Channel 7, which is all 70s. So I'm totally sold on the 70s part of it. It's just trying to find somebody to play RPG. I have no idea. Like I'm almost 50. I don't even know where to start looking for people that would do that. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. It's ironic that you say that, because one of the things that we do is that the game master, the person who's running the game for Spirit of 77 is what we would call a DJ, because the DJ is basically who lays down everything that's going on for the players. And each one within our adventures that we actually publish, we try to have a playlist available for like major characters, saying this character, this is their suggested musical track or theme song. So you can have not just a description of the person, but you can also have that recurring musical interlude for them whenever they appear.
Oh, that's badass.
Yeah. So and
totally
all that's
badass.
So that means it's like, okay, you know, our introductory adventure that's actually free for download. You can check it out on our website, monkeyfunstudios.com. That's my plug. You can download a game an adventure called Cruise Ship of the Damned. And Cruise Ship is exactly what you're thinking. It's a love boat theme. And so you have pre-gen characters, and they're pre-generated, so you don't have to, you know, do a whole lot of number crunching or anything. And like one character is a character that used to be the former head of a fried chicken franchise, Colonel Roscoe of Roscoe's Chicken Shack. And or another one is Gemini, who is like the Ziggy Stardust kind of character, and each one of them has songs associated with them within the adventure. And so that's a real easy thing to download, try it out, and seeing if you like the system.
I'm looking at it right now. I'm starting to punch in my information to download it.
Now, so, David, I think I saw this before, but I want to make sure I got it right. You guys did put together a Spotify playlist about this, didn't you?
Yes, they are. Links to them are on our website under downloads and extras.
Cool.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. Definitely going to be looking at that.
So let me go back to talking a little bit about the changes now. As I said, now independent RPGs have really added new complexity and new depth to games as opposed to just saying, all right, we're going to roll some dice and see whether or not you succeed. One of the biggest independent RPGs right now is a series called – or it's a game called Apocalypse World, put out by a designer. His name's Vincent Baker. And Apocalypse World – has been very prolific in its game system that other games have been using the basic rules system that Vincent put into it, and so those games are called Powered by the Apocalypse, and that's one of the things about Spirit of 77. Now, you don't need to own Apocalypse World to play Spirit of 77. Don't get me wrong, but what it is that it provides a framework for people to be able to pick it up very easily, and I'll even explain a little bit of that, about that in a minute. So one of the key aspects of it is to say, okay, if you want to do something and there's nothing stopping you, you can do it. And that sounds obvious, but it's actually, you know, a big change, because most of the times in the past, it's like, okay, you know, Scott, you're trying to, you know, you see a door, and Scott, you say, well, I'm open the door. Okay, mm-hmm. Roll some dice, and you fail. Well, I can't open the door. Okay, we'll try again. I roll some dice, and I fail. And after a while, it's like a joke, the fact that your character's not, you know, smart enough to be able to open a door, right?
Right.
So what this says is that, okay, with enough time and enough effort, you're going to open the door. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. But it's a situation that when there are things blocking you or things keeping you from doing it, that's when it's a situation you roll dice. And it's real straightforward. It's not a lot of, like, 2 10s, 2 20s, 200 dice. It's 2d6, just 2 6-sided dice. You roll
standard
them.
Dice. Okay.
Yep. 10 and above is a success, 6 and below is a failure, but when you fail, you get an experience point. And 7 to 9 is a partial success, meaning it's a half of what you were trying to do, or it's a success with a cost. Meaning, if you were trying to open a locked door, and then, you know, it was a partial success, you opened it, but behind the door was like a man-eating tiger, and you didn't know that that was going to be behind there, and now you have to deal with the ramifications of it.
Hmm. Okay.
Or you open, or the door is jammed, so you can only, you know, like, get part of the door open. Or you manage to pry the door open, but you've alerted everybody to the fact you're trying to open a locked door, and now people are after you. So the point of all of this is that it's no longer just about rolling dice and trying to, you know, make sure that you stack your character the best way you can. Now it's about what's the best story for you, what's the best kind of character that you want to play, and what do you, you know. Building the plot as a player and as the game master together, so that way you have an enjoyable story experience. And games like this is what's called a story game.
So I'm imagining what character I would want to try to be, and maybe you can help me out with this.
Okay. So describe, if you like, describe some of your favorite characters, you know, from the 70s.
Well, I'm going to tell you.
Be my guest.
I'm going to tell you my top pick. The first thing that came to my mind is Charlton Heston from Soylent Green.
Charlton Heston. All right.
Or from Planet of the Apes. I know that goes back into the 60s, but, you know, still.
Actually, Chuck, what's funny
Chuck
is...
Chuck Heston. Mm-hmm.
I would say, if you're doing it from Soylent Green, even though he's a cop, I'd probably say he's a sleuth. And because you're talking about... if I remember, I think his, well, we'll make it easy. We include a lot of the science fiction, the weird sci-fi aspects of the 70s. So okay. You would be we put it all into a group called X-Tech, meaning, you know, X-Technology. So you would be an X-Tech sleuth.
Okay.
So that would be the kind of character you come from. What about Sweet. You, Dave?
You know, I keep thinking back to End of the Dragon. So I'm thinking Bruce Lee type of influence.
Perfect. Then what you would be is what's called a Kung Fu tough guy, my friend.
Kung Fu tough guy.
All right. In fact, here's what we're going to do. We're actually going to do this right now. I bet you didn't even expect this. Okay. So, all right. So
That was going to be my question. I was going to be, is this something that we'd be able to play, you know, online, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So let's do this right now. All right. So we've got our Kung Fu Tough Guy and we got our X-Tech Sleuth, okay? And one of the things about a story game, especially, or like Spirit of 77 or anything that's powered up by the apocalypse, you ask a lot of questions to build things out. So here's how I'm going to do it. Okay, so I'm going to talk to my Kung Fu Tough Guy for the day. Hello, what's your name, sir?
So I need to have a Kung Fu Tough Guy name? Is that
if
what
you
we're
want?
Saying?
Or we can do, oh, I can just ask. So you want to use your real names? We can do that too.
All right, so Dave, I just because I wasn't thinking through that, so Dave it is.
All right, so Dave, you look like you're a guy that actually studies, you know, part of the Kung Fu arts. So, what's the name of the temple that you belong to?
Bonsai Retro Club.
The Bonsai Retro Club. Okay, and so, you know, and where is that based out of?
San Francisco.
Okay, so you're San Francisco. So what brings you here to the city, you know, because obviously San Francisco is a little bit far away.
Well, I was looking for the glow.
The glow. Oh, yes. So that basically you're trying to be able to improve yourself and be able to get the title. What we would say you're seeking the crown, right?
Yes.
Okay, so what in the city or what was the first place that you went when you went hit the city from San Francisco?
I was looking for the master and what I found out was, you know, I visited a place where they were making, fortune cookies.
Oh, the fortune cookie factory, the one that's actually down by the docks, right?
Yes. Yes.
So let me ask the X-Tech sleuth, what's your name? Scott?
I'm going to go with Thorn.
Thorn.
Thorn,
all right.
Nice.
Yeah.
All
right. Well, so Detective Thorn from Soylent Green, so
that's
I'm going to go with that.
So Detective Thorn, why were you when Dave arrived actually? So why were you investigating the fortune cookie factory?
There was
don't worry about it.
I have no idea. I'm on the spot. I have no idea even where to go with this. I'm sorry.
You're doing all right. Don't worry about it.
I was ripping off the last dragon anyways.
Barry Gordy. No, but go ahead, please.
Something seemed fishy, so I was just
all right, because you were working a case, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Okay, and actually it was that murder case that you were following up on, right?
Yes, murder.
All right. So the murder just happened to be, from what I understand, you know, the name – what was the name of the master you were looking for, Dave?
Johnny Chen.
Okay, so Thorn, Detective Thorn, so you were looking into the investigation of the death of Johnny Chang, and you had actually – what was the lead that took you to the Kung Fu – or to the fortune cookie factory?
Oh, gosh. There was a woman
that
I was with that mentioned something that led me to this location.
Oh, so she was your lead, and
yes,
and she told you dropped something on it. Okay, so Dave, when you see this guy walking around, and he looks like he hasn't had a shower in about a week, and he's walking around, look through the hallway or through the hallways of the fortune cookie factory, you can see him, you know, looking around, opening up boxes, you know, trying to find things, you know, associated with your master who you're expecting to be here at this fortune cookie factory, right? So what do you do?
I confront him and ask him what he's doing.
Okay. So Detective Thorn, all of a sudden the guy comes out. What's Dave? How are you dressed?
I would be wearing a yellow onesie.
Of course you are.
Yeah, of course.
All right. So this guy comes out in a yellow onesie, Detective Thorn, and, you know, points his finger at saying, what are you doing here?
I'm looking into something about the ingredients of this fortune cookie is not right.
Dave, do you believe this guy?
Not at all.
All right, so what are you going to do?
Are you going to throw down?
Hold on a minute. I'm thinking about that. I'll shove him and say, tell me the truth.
Ooh, so he pushed you, and now would be the time we would roll dice to see whether or not that succeeds. We'll say right now he pushes you, and actually when he pushes you, Detective Thorne, you fall backwards into a crate, and there in the crate, you know, popping out of it is within the box filled with the little fortune cookie sayings, the dead body of the woman that you were tailing there. And by the way, David, she is wearing the same kind of uniform you are, so she has to have been a disciple of your master as well, found dead in the fortune cookie factory. And wow. At this moment, when you both are looking at the body, you hear a bunch of guards saying, hey, who are you? And they're all running at you. What do you do?
Well, I would assume that I get into my stance ready to protect myself if they're charging us.
Detective Thorne, what do you do?
Considering I'm a detective, I'm going to show my badge.
Oh, okay. So for the first time, you're actually getting to see, Dave, the fact that you're actually with a cop. Okay. So how do you feel about that? Are you going to protect him, or do you think he's part of it? What do you think is about to occur?
Well, originally I would have thought that he was having something to do with the death of my master, or in this case, one of the disciples. But obviously it's not the case anymore if he's a legit police officer.
Is he?
Well, that's a good point. That is a good point. But if I've got multiple people coming at us, then I'm going to trust him for the moment and protect him.
Okay, so Detective Thorne, although you're doing that, the kung fu guy in the yellow jumpsuit or the yellow outfit is like standing in front of you getting ready to fight. And so you're going to let him basically block for you, or because these guys are coming out and they're pulling out their billy clubs?
Oh, well, if they're being aggressive, I'm going to defend myself also.
How are you going to do that?
I don't know if I have a gun.
Sure you do. Let's say you do. That's another aspect of it, is that it's not, you know, what we're building right now, just to kind of take a step back, is what we're building is called the fiction. And the fiction is basically a combination of your actions and my descriptions and some of the details. So you, by saying, you know, I have a gun, and you're playing a cop character, so that's not too much of a stretch.
It's not
stretch,
no.
So, yeah, you got a gun, you know, because there's no point in me arguing it. Of course, if you said all out of somewhere, I happen to have a helicopter that has a 50 caliber automatic machine gun associated with it, then I might make it a little more complicated for you. But we're trying to make this easy right now. So you pull the gun, okay, and so there, one of the guys is basically doing a cannonball block right into Dave, you know, trying to push Dave into Detective Thorne. So what do you choose to do, Dave?
Well, how many people are we looking at here?
About 6 to 8, and all of them armed with blade clubs.
Okay. So I'm going to block his move and attack if I
can. All right, so you're blocking him. We're going to say this is actually a partial success. So you manage to block him, but when you do that, you knock Detective Thorne. So Detective Thorne, even though that he blocked the guy at tackling you guys, your gun goes flying back into the crates of the fortune cookie sayings. What do, Detective Thorne?
So we have 6 to 8 guys attacking us. My gun goes flying.
Yes.
Dave partially blocked somebody.
Right, so you didn't take any damage, but because of it, because he jostled you, the gun flew off. Like I said,
I guess I'm going to have to go hand to hand.
Fantastic.
Whoever's closest to me.
Okay.
So other than Dave.
It's all right. I'll take on 5 of them. You get 1. So it's good enough.
We'll take actually a jump ahead. So you guys managed to do that exactly. You know, Dave, you take 5 guys out. Detective Thorne, you really rough up that one guy. You know, he's short. He, you know, he's wearing thick glasses. You know, he's not very good.
And
you
he's
know.
Not wearing a fabulous scarf like me, right?
That's true. All wearing a fabulous scarf, might I add. It is gorgeous. All right. So now you're looking
I didn't
at all
know he's part glam here.
No. I don't want to lose that. You got to have the scarf.
From that movie? Absolutely.
So you guys have managed to knock down all the security guards, but now you're starting to hear the alarms going off. What do you do?
Well, I'm going to get my gun back.
Right? Sure.
And probably convince Dave to leave the premises for now so we can come back at a better time.
Now, I think we need to investigate the death of this woman. We need to look and see, you know, what her involvement was.
So what's going to be your plan? Coming back later in the night?
I don't know. Detective Thorne, what do you think?
It might be too late by then. But it's the safer idea for now. Just because the alarms are off and we're being attacked.
Well, I mean, the alarms are off. The people might be coming, but, I mean, they're going to see this dead body just hanging out there. I mean, come on. We need to investigate before she's, you know, they hide her or get rid of the body.
Grab a box of fortune cookies.
Okay.
Mystery
solved right there.
You know, it's either that or we have very short, limited time of investigation.
All right, I'll grab the dead woman and we'll run away.
All right.
Grab the body. All right. Cool.
Well, as you're running to your 71 Camaro, you know, Dave is carrying the dead body in his arms and Detective Thorne is carrying a box of fortune cookies and as he's making his way to the car. We cut to a commercial allowing, you know, us to be able to take a step back and think about what we do next in order to investigate the case of how the cookie crumbles.
Nice.
Oh, that's awesome.
How the cookie crumbles. That's good that you came up with that like that. So that's the gist of it then.
That's a basic way of doing it. Again, we provide we have several digital adventures available that also to provide players and DJs their story ideas. For instance, mm-hmm. one of our adventures that's available is Women's Prison of the Apes.
Oh my God.
I love Women's Prison of the Apes. I do. Because as soon as I say it, you go, I know what this game's all about. There's no surprises there. Beast Bound and Down, which is our version of Smoking the Bandit, but it has nice. Bigfoot in it. And of course, the one, the only Disco Ambulance.
Wow. So what, does it have a disco ball?
For you, it will.
Me and my fabulous scarf.
There you go. Disco Ambulance. That's right. Detective Thorne is driving around in Disco Ambulance.
Yeah.
Disco so that, ambulance. Those are the kinds of adventures we do.
This is awesome. I love the concept, really. I do. Bringing this stuff into something like this, into a game like this, is such a great idea. Now, okay, this is what I want to know.
Sure.
Like, do you remember the moment that you guys said, you know what, we need to make a game out of this 70s thing?
Actually,
I know you guys said that you've enjoyed the 70s, you guys love 70s pop culture, but do you remember like that moment of saying, we need to make a game out of this?
Actually, I do. So what had happened was Bob and I were going to meet up and with some other friends of ours to play another game, and our friends had gotten sick, so our game night had been canceled. Mm-hmm. And I kind of had been putting some ideas together, and my first question to Bob was, are you, of all things, on Pinterest? And Bob said, yeah. No, because I'm not a housewife with a dream board. I said, no, that's not the point. I said, I want you to take a look at this Pinterest board I've been putting in. He goes, all right, let's see your dream wedding, Dave. And he looks at it, and on it is pictures of things like Kiss during the Love Gun tour, and Jim Kelly, and Burt Reynolds, and all these kinds of things. And I just kind of had it all as pictures at the time with captions saying this would be this kind of thing. And Bob took a look at it and goes, I get it. And then we basically started, talking about, well, how would you do this? How would you do that? And I know people laugh about the fact that it started from a Pinterest board, but one of the things that's really nice now, and kind of spinning back to what I was saying, is that as an independent RPGs, there's a lot of good tools out there that you can use so you aren't beholden to other people if you are creative and wanting to, brainstorm, if you're wanting to play test things. You were asking me earlier, Scott, about, I don't know if I would be able to find anybody, but now it's actually very common for people to run games online. There are now game sites called things like Roll20, which are completely open to people who are, even if you're just looking for people, they're available for you, so you can be able to use the internet to be able to communicate, roll dice, see maps, what have you. Cool. So it's
what's this Pinterest page you were talking about? What's the name of it? Because I'm looking for it right now.
I'll shoot it to you later. I believe it was
okay. All right.
Yeah. But the bigger point being is now independent, RPGs are now at a point where they are almost in a renaissance in a way. One thing you could say is that I don't want to quote a wrong number, so if I'm wrong and somebody's listening to this, I apologize. But right now, Kickstarter, a very large portion of the successful game or campaigns that come out of Kickstarter are games. And it is now an accepted idea of saying, I'm going to do a Kickstarter to be able to create a proof of concept for something. And a lot of the ideas that come out of it form into long-term projects or become larger games and actually have multiple Kickstarter campaigns to them. So it's a really good time to be able to test out things that you come up with in your ideas and not be afraid to, just go for it if you felt it. But of course, then you have to decide how much, do I want to be just a game designer? Do I want to be a publisher? But the idea of just creating your first game is much easier to do than it was, say, even 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
I can hear you guys kind of like hearing the wheels turning in your brains as you consider this.
It takes a little while for the handshake to get going. So
I understand. It makes sense today's social networking environment that we have. I mean, everything moves so fast. So it makes sense that a lot of these things can take off so quickly. It's surprising that it's a gaming type project that gets funded so heavily through the Kickstarter programs. I had no idea. I would have never thought that it would be gaming that would be part of that. That would be a big push for that. So it's interesting.
Yeah, and not only in the fact that it's great for creators, but it allows people who like to buy games and to be able to see what's new and praiseworthy, they can now go to something like Kickstarter and be able to say, well, what's hot? What are the new games out there? And they can back things that they wouldn't necessarily know about. So it's not just one direction of like a creator like myself reaching out to people, but it's also people looking for new things and experimenting. I actually, have found a lot of people who found us, Monkey Fun, through Kickstarter because they were just avid Kickstarter backers. I mean, that's just what they do. So there's a very strong community there that really develops a lot of interesting things.
So now, as far as you guys doing your further development, are you continuing to develop Spirit of 77 into new modules and things like that, or are you expanding into, let's say, a different decade?
Oh, wow. So,
if you can talk about anything.
Oh, absolutely I can. So,
okay.
We do have a new double feature adventure coming out soon, and when I say soon, I'm hoping to get it done by the end of the year. And we also have another book that's a physical book, which is a compilation of the digital adventures we've already put out up to this point, and that's called Greatest Hits Volume 1. Because most of the games that we had been putting out were digital adventures, and we wanted to basically compile them so people, you know, a lot of people like the physical copy, so we wanted to be able to offer that to them. Earlier this year, around February, did a new Kickstarter for a new product called Bedlam Hall. Bedlam Hall is best described as Downton Abbey meets the Addams Family. Okay. And yeah, and that also did very well. And we just recently finished doing the fulfillment for the people who backed that, and now that's also available through our website. So now we have two product lines associated with it. And we also, as part of the Kickstarter, I opened my mouth, and unfortunately, I come up with great ideas at the worst time. And I said, "Well, if we manage to get to this amount of backing, we'll add another game in a game called Gruel Truck, which was food trucks in Middle Earth." And and we were at like,
oh my God.
Yeah, we were at a level, and then when we said we had about 48 hours before the Kickstarter would end, and so people were going, "Oh well, we got to get Gruel Truck. We got to." And so that pushed us over the edge. So we had to scramble to be able to get that out as well. And that particular adventure, that particular game comes with paper hats, because if you're doing a food truck game, it has to have hats. And so we have a lot of things coming out right now. We're continuing to build out the Spirit of 77 line. We're continuing to promote Bedlam Hall and Gruel Truck. So we've been very fortunate in that we have been able to build an audience, and we've been able to not just have one idea in a hopper. So what happens is that, you know, some people come to us and say, you know, "I'm not really into the 70s thing." And we say, "All right, well, we've got Bedlam Hall, and it's this." And they go, "Oh, my God, this is the greatest game ever." Or vice versa. We've had people who find Bedlam Hall, and they say, "Nah, this isn't my thing." And then it's like, "Okay, well, have you seen Spirit of 77? And we've been able to develop a lot of interesting interaction with the people who really, really like us. My wife and I went out to Indianapolis in August. There's a very large game convention out there called Gen Con. I don't know if either of you have heard it. And while we were there, we got a great opportunity to meet a lot of people who were fans of both Spirit of 77 and of Bedlam Hall. And they really just came up to us and said, "You know, I love what you guys do. It excites me. What are you guys up to next?" It allowed us to be able to have that face-to-face interaction that we wouldn't normally get if we were just on the internet, you know?
Yeah. So what's a typical day look like at Monkey Fun Studios? I mean, it just sounds – everything you described, it just sounds like you're just able to just sit around and come up with just awesome shit, and I'm just jealous of you.
it's not quite like that. I mean, the wife does wake me up going, "Dave, do you even know where your car keys are?" And then I become Reverend Jim from Taxi. "I don't know. Maybe they're in the cat box, you know." It's not quite, you know, just sitting there, you know, like Willy Wonka. Some of it really is trying, you know. If you ask my wife what the fulfillment of our last Kickstarter was, you know, she wouldn't mention, you know, "Oh yeah, great idea." She would look you stone in the eye and say, "It involved mailing a lot of envelopes," and there would be no smile on her face. You know, she's a trooper and basically is the one who makes, you know, all the fulfillment happen and a lot of the background scenes. So making a game is not just coming up with ideas. You know, the strongest thing I always say to people is creating an idea is actually relatively easy, but completing an idea is the work. And getting it over, you know, not just making an interesting idea, but, you know, making it into something playable, getting people's feedback, continuing to refine it, and then ultimately, either through a Kickstarter or whatever, to be able to get it into people's hands so they can enjoy it and then take it to the next level. There's lots of layers to it.
So you're not just sitting at a desk and say, okay, here's a great idea. Go do it.
No. That's... No, no, no. I wish that were the case.
Or is that Bob's job?
No.
Bob's the one that just goes, go do it.
Like I said, a game studio is, doing a lot of work, doing a lot of email interaction, doing a lot of financial planning, a lot of stationery, and we have a good time with it, and it's a lot of fun, and it's one of those things that it's an interesting, I want to say it's a little bit bigger than a hobby, but, you know, it's not necessarily a career for us yet, but it is something to where, you know, we get to do what we love and actually have it pay for itself, and so that's a lot of fun.
Not only do you get to have it pay for itself, but it's also a tax write-off now, too.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
You got business expenses gaming.
I just want, if the IRS is listening, I just want you to know that we really had a lot of need, you know, to go see the gaming stores in Las Vegas.
This is called research. This is the R&D.
I know.
This is the R&D portion of our business.
Vegas is very fully important, and ignore that fully trip to the Bahamas.
I'm just saying, you know, Caesar's Palace, they were very serious about wanting to know more about the 70s. So we came out. We showed them a few things. That's how we do. You know, we're giving back, you know.
Hey, you're giving back to people that love the 70s, and that is beautiful.
Yes.
That is beautiful.
And again, it's getting to champion things that we love and getting to share it with people, some people for the first time that they had never seen it before.
You know, this is – I mean, that's what you guys are doing. You're doing something that you're creating this – you created this game that it's about a time and that you love. And that's all we do on our show. You know, we get to geek out about the eras that we love, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, more 70s than for me than anything. And 80s, 80s, a very close second. 90s. I kind of checked out. I don't remember a lot of the 90s, but I'm starting to remember things as we talk more about it. But this is, I mean, you've just got to be so excited to be able to go to work and have fun with this all the time.
It's like I said, the real reward is getting an opportunity to run into somebody who said, you know, I actually, this is a true story, and this probably won't have, you know, the kind of impact it did on me when it occurred, for you guys. But when we were at Gen Con, I was running several games, and because of it, you know, we had a booth that we were sharing with another group. And while I was gone, I came back, and somebody who was behind the booth said, oh, a guy came by looking for you. And I, you know, he said he's a real fan of the game, but he couldn't stick around, so he just left a note. And, okay, cool. And the note was actually from the gentleman I mentioned, Vincent Baker, the gentleman who created Apocalypse World. And it says, you know, Dave, love your game, Vince. And that's not unlike having Elvis stop by and say, hey, dig your music. E. Mm-hmm. Like, what? He was here and I missed him, you know, and I'm running around and there must have been about 50,000-75,000 people there at Gen Con, and I'm running around like Dustin Hoffman, you know, in The Graduate going, wait, Vincent, wait. No idea. it's just one of those things that's very rewarding to have people who, you know, not just in the industry, but just like, you know, any everyday folks, you know, come up and say, I love this. This makes me laugh. I get to have fun with this. Actually, one of the best that I had is that recently a gentleman came up to me and said, I enjoyed playing Gruul Truck because he just received it with my son. And that's the kind of thing that you go, wow, I helped. I allowed them to have a little bit of a bonding experience, you know. That's kind of cool, you know. I mean, it's not one of those things about, you know, being, you know, rich and famous, you know. It's the fact that, yeah, people enjoy it, and that's a good feeling.
Yeah, I know exactly how you feel, and I've gotten that moment, you know, not that we had, like, you know, somebody that was a titan of the podcast industry, you know, reach out to us, but we had a listener that actually lives in Denmark, and, you know, I've done email correspondence back and forth, and he listens to the show all the time. Scott, I'm talking about Frederick.
Yes.
And, you know, and just to get the feedback and just to get the, oh, I really love that episode where you guys talked about blank, blank, blank. And it's like, you know, that's it. That's the reason to do it right there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, thank you. I love it. You know, and that's, I get what you're saying. I completely get it.
I had a friend that I went to high school with. That I don't know, you know, I promote the show on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and on Facebook she heard about it, and she actually sent me a message recently saying she's loving the new show, the new format and stuff, and that one person, you know, that makes a big difference when you're like looking for a little validation of what you're doing, you know. And it makes it so much more rewarding than the monetary side of things. So,
well, you don't necessarily make games to, you know, to go to the Bahamas on, but
oh right, no,
it's niche.
We know we're not doing that for that. We're not doing that for that either. We're
so I'm going to go into that lucrative podcast money because that's what I'm holding.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just throwing money at us, you know.
The mermaid pool. Oh, it's fine, you know, the Ferris wheel and all that, you know, that's all good, you know.
Yeah, the checks in the mail.
Exactly.
But I would imagine that's what it'd be like is, you know, if you were at an event like Gen Con, you know, and just getting that, you know, people coming up and just geeking out with you about your game or about some element of the game. I would think that would be it. That would be, you know, not, you know, you got that moment where you got to be creative and you put this thing out into the world. But then for somebody to go, I get it. I appreciate it. That's cool.
One of the things that you see a lot in gaming is the people who come up and go, I want to tell you about my character, and then they spend 2-3 hours doing it. But I actually, and I know this is hard to believe, but I love it when people tell me about what they did with Spirit of 77. It's like, I want to tell you how things went completely haywire. Going, entertain me, tell me a story. And it's always gratifying to know that, you know, their creativity, you know, or that they took what I had and were able to spark into something absolutely off the wall. I think probably one of my favorites is that somebody came up with this great idea of a bopper gang, you know, like from the Warriors, but everybody was a chef. So they were running around. I think they even called themselves the Swedish Chefs. And so
Cleavers.
Yeah! It's not going. Right, and they're running around. It's like 8 to 10 guys all dressed like the Swedish Chef. And you're thinking, well, that's nutty. Oh, actually, this is a true story. This is an absolute hand-to-God story I'm about to tell you. So one time I was running a game called the game Women's Prison of the Apes. And Women's Prison of the Apes is a reverse in the fact that the players have to break into prison. Okay? So they are, you know, doing that. And so there's a role that's called the honeypot. And the honeypot are basically the people who are a little bit manipulative. Basically, every movie role Warren Beatty has been in, he's been a honeypot. Okay? So this guy is playing it, and I've never been him before. It was at a game convention. And as we're, like, doing the introductions to everybody's characters, he says, by the way, I'm wearing red, white, and blue breakaway pants with snaps down the center that are all silver, and I'm not wearing any underwear. Okay. And I'm listening to – he really spends a lot of time talking about it. I'm thinking, okay, cool. All right. We'll go with that. And I don't know how much you guys know about theater, okay? But in theater, there's a construct called Chekhov's gun, and put out by the playwright Anton Chekhov. And Chekhov's gun is basically, if you introduce a gun in the first act, it is required to be fired in the third act, right? You don't introduce anything that doesn't come up later, okay? There's a corollary to this called Chekhov's pants, where if somebody's going to tell you in the beginning, I'm wearing breakaway pants with no underwear on, in act three of your game,
there's nudity.
That, yeah, basically they decided, all right, we're going to get in here by putting on this huge concert, you know, for the women's prisoners. And in the middle of the concert, he stands up, and I think he may even stood up on his chair, and he goes, now's my moment. And everybody goes, oh, no, because we all knew what he was going to do. And sure enough, he gets up there, and he doesn't even have to say it. He just goes, snap, 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 snap. And in our alternative history of the game, he invented twerking because he said so. And at this moment, I just look around going, this doesn't happen in other games. What have I done? My mother expected more. But
now, did he have to roll the dice to see if the breakaway pants worked?
No. He did have to roll the dice to see how the women responded to it.
Oh, love it.
Yeah, so, those pants came right off. And I'm thinking, okay, sure, we'll go with that. No problem. So, and the reason why I tell this story, outside of the fact it's absolutely insane, is I love getting to hear those kinds of things where it's totally out of somebody's imagination. It's like, we're gonna do this and see what happens, you know? Another thing just comes to mind. So a buddy of mine I was running a game for this group of friends, and he decided he was going to have one of those tricked out vans from the 70s. And you know the type I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And so I said, all right, well, what does it look like? Because obviously it's got a painting job on the side. And he goes, well, my van's theme is Jaws. And on the side, it has the picture of the person painting or the swimming. And in the front of it, it has like the shark. And on the top, it's got the water or the lifeguard tower on the top of it, like that's put up there, like a fake person up there. So basically, like there's a lifeguard on top of the van. And so he starts doing this car chase at one point, and one of the other players is on top, you know, in the lifeguard seat, and he says, all right, I'm going to honk the horn. Okay, you know, you go ahead, honk the horn. Dun-dun. And I'm thinking, where did that come from? What is, what, really?
Good stuff.
So, yeah, I've seen a lot of fun, and I love the fact whenever, you know, the game totally inspires people to do things that they wouldn't normally do, and, you know, sparks a lot of creativity and imagination.
Well, Dave, just so you know, there's this one time I was doing this game with this guy. They call himself Detective Thorne. He grabbed a box of fortune cookies while we're investigating a murder. I mean, what an idiot.
Well, yeah. Well, see, what you didn't know, though, is that those cookies actually have chemical equations on every single one of them, and they were using the cookies in order to be able to get out secret government information, and Detective Thorne has fallen into a conspiracy that now you're involved in as well.
Well, you know, and then that's exactly why I told him to grab that box of fortune cookies.
Of course.
Oh, sweet. So, So David, how do people follow you? What you know, you're obviously on your website, monkeyfunstudios.com.
Yes. And we have a Facebook and Monkey Fun Studios and a Twitter, which is Monkey Fun Studio because it didn't fit the whole thing. We're also on Instagram and Google Plus and, yeah, you know, reach out to us. Definitely, you know, if you hear this and you got some questions or you just, you know, come by our website, say hi. We love it.
And I know, Scott, you and I are probably going to have a follow-up conversation about maybe trying to do one of these games online. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
I think we might have to do that.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I'm wondering what that would work, if that would work well, like, as a podcast, actually.
Actually, yeah. You know, kind of going back to some of what I was saying, one of the things that has been very nice is you know, we've had a lot of people reach out to us that have podcasts, and specifically a lot of people who play do what's called an actual play that they do as their podcast, where they run a game and then they you know, they basically post their results, and people like it because what happens is that, you know, sometimes people are in, you know, not unlike what you just mentioned, Scott, where they didn't have a local group that they play with, or, you know, they're, you know, just don't have time. It allows them to still kind of get their dose of gaming, you know, even though that, you know, they aren't getting to participating, but they're getting to, you know, hear the laughs and follow along. So podcast actual plays have also given a new opportunity for RPGs that didn't exist before.
Interesting. You know, I'm actually, there's a place not too far from here, a smaller mall that has a gaming store in it that I'm going to have to go talk to them and see if they actually have this stuff or if they know about it. Because if not, I'm going to definitely share it with them. I went in there for – I was doing some photography, and I had a project. I needed to do some depth of field stuff. Or I don't know if you're familiar with photography, but I was looking for some depth of field stuff. And the little characters that they have, you know, they're maybe an inch high or whatever.
Miniatures.
Miniatures, thank you. When they have them in their display cases, make a great option for depth of field to show, you know, that one little thin line of focus and everything is out of focus. So anyway, I'm in there. Sorry, long story short, trying to make it short. I have a tendency to go on tangents and talk too long.
No. Not
Dave,
you.
Dave knows I'm the tangent king. So anyway, I was in there, and there was this whole group of people in there playing all these different games. It had to be, I don't know, maybe 15 to 18 people. And this is like in the middle of the day,
mm-hmm.
on a weekday. I'm like, what are these guys all doing here? And so I'm going to have to go up there and see if they know about this game, because if not, I'm definitely going to share it with them and try to get it a little more exposed.
That would be great.
Yeah, definitely. And maybe, who knows, maybe they already know about it and they can invite me in for a game or two.
Fantastic.
I'm just curious, David, how long do you think Cruise Ship of the Damned would take?
I usually run it about 2.5, maybe 3 hours.
Okay. All right. That could be a multi-parter then. Who knows? All right. Well, very cool. So, David, you've been very generous with your time. We completely appreciate you sharing about the Spirit of 77. I learned way more about, you know, the evolution of RPGs because I kind of checked out in the 1980s. But, you know, just seeing what you had going on with the Kickstarter and your webpage, I knew it was something we needed to talk to you about because of the theme. And you sold me, and it sounds like you sold Scott, so that's awesome.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you guys for having me on. I do appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks again. It's been a lot of fun learning about this great game about the pop culture of the 70s, because, you know, like I said before, that's probably one of my most – I talk about it a lot. actually. I bring it up a lot to a lot of people, and they probably, their eyes probably glaze over a couple times, you know. But it's, I'm very excited about this. I'm happy for you guys that you're able to get it up and rolling and expand on it and get going with this. It's very cool. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
So as we say at the end of these things, we just ask everybody to be excellent to each other, because, you know, there's a lot of people that are just being, I don't know, just not nice. So that's my new ending phrase for our shows, and just want to say, have a good whatever, because we have no idea when you're going to be listening to this.
Stay groovy, Papas. Keep on trucking tonight.
David, it's been a pleasure, man. You are a blast to talk to.
Thank you, sir. It's been, like I said, it's been fun talking with you guys.
We'd love to have you back sometime too.
All right. Tell you what, you guys check out the game. You know, you put out your list of questions and we can follow up.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
All right.
Take care. Bye.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Banzai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Banzai!
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 Banzai!